SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, approaching the top of the hour, and I'm just watching Ginny Reed, Butchie's wife Ginny, put up a video on Facebook, the workout of Maximus Mischief getting ready for the Holy Bull on Saturday, and boy, the racetrack still looks like there's plenty of moisture. It looks very tapped down and not muddy, but it still looks pretty sodden. Nick Tamaro is going to join us, and we've been doing the recapping of the Game Builder segments on Monday, but it's especially fun to do it today because Nick himself finished ninth in the PWCBC. you gotta get your initials. And Nick with a nice, nice $40,000 weekend. Be nice to cash for $40,000 every weekend.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, if only it was that easy. But it worked out well. It was a good couple of days. I left the track Friday. I was talking to my man Philly Joe and Pat Cummings, and I said, well, today was a good example of study long, study wrong, and we'll see if we can make it a little bit better tomorrow. So I offered Friday. I had nothing, got alive in some doubles at the end of the card, and both of those horses finished well up the track. So it was a very, very poor performance, but luckily got things going on Saturday, and was able to get a little slice of it.
And we'll talk about some specifics, and then we'll get into, as part of it, the pick four that we laid out, and what the what the key learning was. But first, the Friday last year, the players were very frustrated with. This at least had some full fields. They put together some claiming crown style starter handicaps. And what was the overall feeling? I mean, were people happier with the offerings? It did seem like they pretty much were playing close to the vest and playing the minimum.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was going too hog wild, knowing that you had to put 4,000 into the two Pegasus races combined. I think everybody was just trying to kind of tread water as much as they could. Horse players generally lament in general. So I think that there were probably some people who didn't love the offering on Friday, but it was definitely, I did not play this contest last year, but I can imagine this was a better series of races. They were pretty competitive all in all, and made for, I thought, they did their best to put a decent card out there. The first part of it was pretty weak, but there's Friday card. There's not a whole lot of super competitive races taking place in the first five on a Friday. So I think it worked out better all in all. It definitely could have been worse. And then what it set up for was the bonanza on Saturday that you wanted to be as prepared for as possible, and that worked out pretty well. So I don't know if everybody loved it. I don't know if everybody hated it, but I think there were enough people that saw opportunities to at least play a race or two.
Well, and let's talk about those opportunities, and also how did the weather moving in and, basically taking really, I think, everybody a little bit by surprise. I mean, it was not until fairly late in the week that, the specter of off going even raised its head, and then it went from bad to worse.
Yeah, I actually did not realize the forecast had turned as much as it did, and I was talking to a friend on Friday night, and they were like, oh, do you think they'll be on the turf tomorrow? And I said, on the turf? So what are you talking about? They're like, oh, the weather has turned quite a bit. So I looked at the forecast and was like, oh, geez, I had no idea it got this bad. So it was a bit surprising. It was a little bit like this year's Derby, I think, where we thought there was going to be weather at a certain time, and then there was weather at a different time. So it really did catch everybody a little bit by surprise, and then it was worse overnight, I think, than we expected. I guess the effect that it had on the first half of the card was that anybody that expected to make or was going to try to make a big move in what would have been much more competitive runnings of the two turf sprints and even the first didn't have that opportunity anymore. So I think, if anything, it maybe pared down the movement on the leaderboard that we could have seen. Nobody had what looked like an insurmountable lead, so everybody was sort of there for the taking, and anybody felt like they could probably, in a one or two race move, make a real dent in whatever their deficit was. So I think that was probably the biggest effect that the weather had. I know that the turf sprint itself would have probably been a more competitive race on turf, because World of Trouble wouldn't have been 1-5 with Stormy Liberal in there, but it was likely to be one of those two, right? So it wasn't as if anybody, unless somebody was making a huge exact or a huge cold try, I don't think anybody was going to make $50,000 in the race. But I think the ladies turf sprint probably suffered a little bit because of that, and so it just made everybody adjust. What I like about these days is that a lot of people have a tendency to just pout about races being off the turf, and they don't want to take any opportunity to change their handicapping or to re-handicap or figure out, you know, what else they could do. And it does give you some of the last opportunities for value in this game do present themselves in races taken off the turf. And I can't say that enough. So if you feel like you want to just completely bail on a given card because of the weather, take another look and give yourself an opportunity to at least try.
The race in between the two sprints, the maiden race that had the big full field, and we end up with a Billmont winner at $18 and the other Chad Brown, and we had a conversation on Derby Trail, as it happens, about the other Chad, the one that was going to be the shorter price, Samaranti. And anybody that had looked at Mike Welch's notes in the Clocker report knew that Samaranti was not keeping up with High Amplitude as it happened. And so, I ended up playing with a couple of prices, including the ill-fated boy. Tripwire had a cardiac incident, and I felt terrible. And I haven't mentioned this yet, but Tripwire for the Ramses and Mike Maker, you know, had been working really well and looked well spotted for the day, not the debut, but for a first time on dirt, and suffered a cardiac incident and mid race. Did not make it, and I wanted to mention I felt terrible. But High Amplitude was a horse, Nick, that I at 11-1 felt like a really nice price, and Hidden Scroll just was hidden, at least, you know, for me. And he ended up with a big exacta here of $100 basically for a dollar exacta, and I'm sure some people made some movement there.
Yeah, there were definitely some that made movement. In fact, our friend John Nichols, Clocker,
yes,
Churchill Downs, made big move there. This was a difficult horse for the public to have, because obviously pace and workouts are not tracked by anyone and don't appear on the DRF Clocker report. And it's funny, exactly what you just said is what I had said to the people I was sitting with at the contest, which was that Samaranti was being outworked regularly by High Amplitude, who I believe the Clocker of Donald Harris noted is probably going to be better with even more ground. So High Amplitude might be one of those later developing three-year-olds that has an opportunity down the line. I don't know exactly what to say about Hidden Scroll. I mean, there was an element of that performance that was sort of unbelievable, because you saw these insane fractions going up. And, I mean, he was just completely and totally within himself. And I was standing and watching it with one of the other players, who told me who they needed coming out of the gate. And they then said, oh, look, the one is showing speed. And I said, yeah, that's a big problem. We had a Billmont horse to show that kind of speed going a mile when it had taken money, too, in a big day maiden special weight race. It felt like it was a bad big problem for everybody else in the field, and it certainly played out that way. So I don't know if there's been as anticipated a second start for a horse. I mean, maybe since Justify, but I think we all sort of knew Justify was good. There's a little bit of skepticism that you have to approach this Hidden Scroll race with because of the wet track and those kind of things. But geez, it was incredible. I mean, I am still sort of awed by it, So hopefully we'll see him, I guess, maybe in the Fountain of Youth, which I guess would come up okay timing-wise, because he sure does look like something special. And word was getting around the track pretty quickly afterwards that Mott was approaching the whole thing with a great amount of confidence, and certainly it played out that way. So it was, I was not surprised to see the 104 Beyer. It was a race where I thought it could be anywhere from mid-90s to mid-105-ish or so, and he earned it, no doubt about it. That was quite the effort.
One of the frustrating parts I thought of Saturday, and I mean, in retrospect, it was really kind of a very formful day. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of excitement race to race. And one of the things that can be maddening, especially if you're playing contest, is, you know, working hard during your handicapping process to identify prices and, you know, options and win candidates at, you know, solid numbers. And then to have, you know, one of the very obvious horses win. And that's what happened in the South Beach, where, you know, we were all trying to see if there was an alternative to Dolce Lilly and, you know, Road to Victory. And yet, there wasn't, how does that deflate you if you're playing and you know, you get a series of these kinds of beats or, you know, basically where you don't cash because things ended up, you know, very formful.
That actually was the best result I had all day until the Pegasus. So yeah. I liked Conquest Hard Candy. And nice. The main horse I played her with was Dolce Lilly. So I had 500 to win on Conquest Hard Candy. So it would have certainly been nice if she could have gotten there. No complaints whatsoever. Dolce Lilly was best. Conquest Hard Candy had a very, very good trip. And she was an interesting horse for a variety of reasons. One of which was she was the horse you wanted to bet back out of that allowance race that three horses were coming out of, mainly because she just was in neutral the whole way down the stretch. And it was through no great fault of her jockey that day, but she's getting a rider change to Gaffleone. It was looked like a situation where she'd be a little bit forwardly placed, and you know, a lot of times on the super boggy courses, you don't really want to have to try and outfoot everybody late. It ended up, I think, that as crazy as it sounds, I actually think those courses were on the firmer side of yielding, if that makes any sense at all. In fact, you look at the Pegasus turf, they weren't really kicking up anything, but the courses probably needed some moisture. That being said, that result was, it was good for me. I had a nice exacta, and that's what launched me back into contention after going 0-for-6, more or less, going into that. So the big disappointment for me was the next race where my opinion basically was that Stormy Embrace and Pacific Gale were horses that you wanted to get on the ticket, and the horse that I played them with was Blamed, who was pretty much the only Bill Mott horse on Saturday in the early part of the card that didn't run well. Maybe didn't take to the wet turf or the wet track or what, who knows, but that was a little bit of a drag. But, you know, the I guess as an overall statement on the contest and the results and things like that, it goes without saying that everybody is getting better at these contests. And we ran into Duke Matisse at dinner on Saturday night, and he was sort of lamenting the plight of the live money contest player, which is that regardless of how much you've amassed in your bankroll prior to the last race, you're never out of it. You know, if you're willing to put all of your money forward, then you can pass everybody in a way, sort of like Preston Sims did. And so you get a guy like Pat Gianforte, who's an excellent contest player, who you see on the top of leaderboards all the time, whether it's win place contests or live money. He had a $17,000 lead going into the last race, hit for 20 in the Pegasus, and finished fourth. So, you know, it was just one of those results. And it used to be that if you were somebody like me, you would say, okay, you know, a 9-to-5 shot won the race. I'm going to figure out how to make a winning wager. But a lot of the people who are likely to bet 8,000 to win on Audible or Gunavera or somebody like that, they're all going to lose. But everybody's getting sharper when it comes to these contests and how to play them. And it's showing. It's really, you're seeing movement on the leaderboard in races where 3-to-1 shots win. You're seeing movement when 15-to-1 shots win. I mean, believe me, when Aztec Sense and Fellowship were running 1-2 in the Fred Hooper, everybody in the contest room was going nuts, because I think Fellowship was probably more like 17-to-1 in the contest room than he was the 70-to-1 on the board. So it's just making the the quality of the players in the contest and the ability that they now have to make a variety of wagers across multiple different pools are really making this whole thing a lot more difficult. And I think you saw that by the way everybody kind of came together in the Pegasus, and you had three people who were nowhere near the lead going into it end up 1-2-3.
Well, and we'll get to that too, because Preston Sims, and when we get Preston most likely tomorrow, he hits with a $1,400 try, and the decision, considering what we talked about on Friday, the decision to focus on City of Light and accelerate, I mean, that only was amplified as the day was going on. I mean, it became fairly obvious that City of Light would probably have a tactical advantage given his running style and given the racetrack, and certainly that's the way Preston Sims bet it. You know, he ended up keying City of Light first and back keying accelerate third with four horses in between. So basically, he had a $5,600 play with the, you know, a single four single, and that hits, and it ends up, you know, paying over $100, you know, for each dollar, so $147,000 back, and that takes him from, you know, from, he must have had about $10,000 or give or take his final total. His final had $10,000 left, so he must have had about $16,000 going into the finale, and you know, ends up with $157,000 total. You mentioned the Aztec Sense Breaking Lucky race with the 70-1 Fellowship third, and so the try there pays $225 basically for a buck. In between, though, the Prevaillant, and this ended up being, I thought, a maddening result, because CK S. Bueno, we're going to talk to Graham Motion next, she was my fourth horse. I end up leaving her off the pick four play. She was a C in the pick four, and I end up with nothing out of that middle pick four. Santa Monica rallies, looks like she's going to win, and then here came Chris Landeros, who's riding tremendous. Semper Centatia ran a very nice race to be third in here, and then you had the 50-1 shot. I mean, we don't play supers in this, but the 50-1 shot basically gets bobbed. God knows what happens to the contest if that AA Azula's Arch wins that photograph.
True. Yeah, no, there was a lot of variability there, and you know, I think there was some movement on the board after that. Obviously, a mid-priced winner is always going to help out quite a few people. So, yeah, I mean, we were pretty touch and go race to race that, you know, that whole afternoon, given that we're just sort of waiting for somebody to really burst clear. And it wasn't until the Pegasus turf that Pagianforte made his move. So anytime you have that kind of bankroll power and that many people taking shots at pretty competitive races, you know there's going to be a big move somewhere.
Let's pause on the contest, the discussion, to talk about the late pick four and the way you constructed the ticket. And, you know, clearly this thing ended up being very formful, but the A play gets hit three times.
Hello?
Nick grabbing the other call, which is fine. We Nick's got, you know, this is not his only job. So we'll wait till he comes back. You know, but a reminder that let me pull that up, actually.
Steve, I got a jet in a couple minutes.
All right. Well, then let's quickly hit the highlight of the pick four and the what we learned by, you know, having the all A play hit three times.
Yeah, it returned a pretty handsome sum, I would say, all in all, given the relative expectation and the odds. And so it was a gratifying result in that respect. I think Aztec Sense obviously beating Coppertown in a situation where a lot of people gravitated to Coppertown helped getting that second choice. And Bricks and Mortar was not a big choice by any means at 5-2, so you had a little bit of room there as well. So, yeah, it was one of those where, you know, you didn't need a I mean, I think if Solio beats Zulu Alpha, we get a little bit more. And obviously, City of Light beating Accelerate helped. So it was more or less the first or second A in every race that got the job done. So that was it ended up paying, I think, $140 or so for a dollar, somewhere in that range, which was a good, nice little return. And yeah, I think as we try a few different wagers in this setup, we'll see some nice returns all in all.
Yeah, the 80, it was $80, 83, I think, for every 50 cents. So 250 basically by hitting it three times. And
right.
what that shows is, you know, we're trying to drive home the point that increasing the multiple of your all A, of your prime opinions, no matter how you structure, is almost secondary. But when you have got, you know, if you've identified two, and in this case, there was also three horses that you identified in the McKnight, Solio, Zulu, and Hunting Horn, which happened to be the trifecta, those opinions, if you take that 2 by 3 by 2 by 2, you know, that's $24, 24 times. If you hit that 2-3 times, even if it chalked out, you did fine. You know, and had Hunting Horn managed to, you know, pop and win, you get a you know, a little better, as you mentioned, Solio. You know, and it, frankly, if one of the B prices, we're looking around, who were the B prices that would have made things, well, Gunavera, really, it was the optimal, given the way the day turned out, it was sort of the optimal result.
Yes, it definitely was. There was little to complain about, and worked out all in all. So, yeah, I'm happy with it.
How about your final play then that got you to ninth and got you a nice $40,000 payday?
I got I played doubles into City of Light with Bricks and Mortar and Airless, who obviously didn't run well. Thanks, Pat Cummings. But anyway, so the Bricks and Mortar City of Light combo was worth I had $1,200 on that, and then keyed Seeking the Soul, Gunavera, and Bravazo under City of Light in the exactas, and so ended up with $800 on the exacta. So the exacta plus the double was about $45,000, and then I'll get a $7,500 prize for finishing ninth. So was hoping to get in the mix for that Gulfstream on track bonus and didn't quite get there, but still a great day all in all. I mean, to turn six into 45 in one day, I'll take it, and it'll set us up well for contests the rest of the year and give you a little confidence going into the NEC.
And I, you know, somebody asked also online after I congratulated you with a tweet, somebody asked about the way you guys partnered up and explain, because Philly Joe had won his way in. So when you say 6,000, you both put up 6,000 and you basically shared two different entries.
No. 6,000 was my bankroll going into Saturday. No, I play all of my contests with Marshall, Philly Joe, and Pat. So we're partners on our entries, and so we were partners on this. We took some of the money we had from the Breeders' Cup and reinvested it in this. So that's how we play our contests all year. We sort of set up some money aside at the beginning of the year and then use that throughout the year on contests. And fortunately, we've been able to just keep it going without having to re-up anything and have been able to take a little dividend here and there. So,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's our setup. I never play a contest where I have anything less than the greatest share. So somebody may have as much as me, but nobody's going to have more. I don't play that way. So, but yeah, I mean, it obviously makes it a lot easier to play a high level live money contest when you've got some people that you can share it with, and that's pretty much how I've done it going back to the Breeders' Cup in 2014. And it's I think, the best setup for everybody. And fortunately, the partners that I have are great in that they're not going to micromanage it at all. Of course, they know that I really wouldn't have that. But, yeah, at the same time, it makes it more fun for multiple people.
Well, and Marshall was playing his own ticket, and Joe was playing his.
Right. I mean, and we play them completely independently. Joe has his style. I have no idea. I couldn't tell you one thing that Marshall bet. He was playing it through ExpressBet at Oaklawn. So, yeah, everybody just does their own thing, and we go from there.
Well, well done. We'll do more on this a little bit probably Friday, but more than anything, we'll be focused on a very big day, Withers Day and Holy Bull Day and Bob Lewis on the three-year-old front and lots of other supporting stakes. Nick, great job. Everybody appreciates what they're learning here and helping in their bankroll management and their ticket building, and we'll talk on Friday.
Thanks a lot, Steve. I appreciate it.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, and Tam, 1215. We got about 40 minutes to fill out, and I should mention that it is a Monday, one of these Monday afternoons at Fairgrounds. They've got the little bit of a card to take a look at today, and for those of you that might not have been aware, Monday matinee down on Gentilly. So keep that in mind, and it's a it's a lot of claiming, action. There's one Louisiana bred maiden special. There's a smallish field of allowance fillies, 3 year olds, including Cassie with Mrs. Weber's Furiously Fast, who scratched for this spot, and Lunar Orbit in here for Dallas Stewart. And that's a card well worth looking at. We've got plenty yet to do. Graham Motion is going to join us next. He's on the road somewhere, and we'll talk to Graham about the Argentinian mare that looks like she's going to be a force. And Graham's had quite a bit going on. And then Weston Hamilton, your Eclipse Award-winning apprentice rider, although he's a journeyman now, the son of Cowboy Steve Hamilton. And that was a highlight, I thought, of Thursday. And it'll be a highlight of this Monday at the races get-together back after this with Graham Motion.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
You have my heart, and we'll never be worlds apart. Maybe in magazines, but you still be my star. Baby, because it's...
races. 25 into hour three. It's been a fast-moving Monday, but we expected that after the big weekend, and part of the big weekend included the Privillon win by, and I'm going to assume I'm saying it right, C.K.S. Buena. Graham Motion, this Argentinian mayor, has really done very little wrong since coming to the United States. She's a six-year-old, and I thought she was dynamite. Winning the mile and a half event. Congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. And, you know, she came to the U.S. She ran a very deceptive fourth in the Long Island that, you know, if things had gone a little differently, she could have won at 60-1, then came back and was great in the Via Borghese back before the new year. Now she's a graded stake winner in North America. What's going on here?
Well, to be honest, when I ran her in the Long Island, I wasn't sure exactly what to expect, but she had improved kind of with every week I had her and every breeze that she did. So I was starting to get a little bit excited about her before the Long Island. I think she probably surprised Rajiv a little bit with how well she finished that day, and he jumped off her, and he was, you know, very excited about her. With the way she finished up. And she's just kind of been a progression from there. She's just sort of handled everything we've asked her to do.
We'll get into some more detail, but how did she even come to you?
That's a very good question, actually. And it's a bit of a long story, probably longer than I can go on here. But I was connected with an agent from South America who had asked me to take this filly for these Japanese clients.
And that's all it takes. So she
she comes. Kind of came out of the blue over WhatsApp. I mean, it's kind of a bizarre story, but it just goes to show in this game, you never know where the next good one's coming from.
Well, it's especially the case. You know, it's one thing when we look at these South American race courses and, you know, you see certain places and you see certain, you know, anytime you see Grand Premio and so forth, you know what you're looking at, and you can also tell by the dollar amounts. She was not winning big races down there. I mean, it's that's what's so impressive, that, you know, she could come seemingly, you know, up from a B circuit or even a C circuit and be this good.
For sure. I mean, I think in fairness, Nelson, who found the filly, he's very sharp. He's based down there in South America, and he, you know, he's obviously dealt with these clients before, and he's obviously got a very good handle on the form. And, you know, it's so important to know where these horses are coming from and sort of what they've been doing. And he had a very good handle on it and picked out a nice filly.
Big time.
For not crazy money, I don't think.
Well, there you go. She's by equal stripes.
It's harder to do, I think, as the game becomes more and more international. It's so hard to find good horses at a sensible price, you know, when they've already started racing.
Well, yeah, when you've got Peter Brandt, you got Peter Brandt and Buzz Schwartz and Sol and you got all these guys out that are poaching that are, you know, They're finding them under every rock and nook and cranny.
Yeah, the world has become much smaller for us, that's for sure.
Well, C.K. S. Buena, she wins down in her first try at Gulfstream, and you put Chris Landeros on, and we've been talking about Chris extensively, not just because of our affection for Ian and Tracy Wilkes and the fact that he's their son-in-law, but the fact that he has really elevated his game, Graham, and he's getting into barns like yours. He put a terrific ride on her, not just in the Borghese, but on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I've been really impressed with Chris. I hadn't ridden him a lot. I was obviously aware of him. He rode a little colt for Calumet called English B at Keeneland for me and rode him really well. Might have ridden somebody else at Keeneland for me. And then, you know, when we got down to Florida, you know, the big guys, Irad and Jose, they have, you know, they have big stables to ride for, so it becomes harder to get them. And Chris just, you know, fell into us you know, he was available in some of these races, and I've started using him more and more, and I've been really impressed with his riding. And honestly, he won the race for us on Saturday. He rode us so patiently, and I think it's so hard to find guys that will ride the grass as patiently as these top riders. And, you know, he really impressed me with the way he rode the filly on Saturday.
Now, talk about the trip and what the, you know, what the plan was, or the expectation anyway. And plus, of course, you were dealing with a course that was, you know, taking plenty of water. It had rained during the week, and then, you know, Saturday was plenty complicated from the weather side.
Yeah, I wasn't overly concerned. I mean, she'd obviously handled the distance in the Long Island, and the turf course that day was hardly firm, so I really wasn't that concerned about the conditions. My bigger concern was coming back in 4 weeks off of, you know, what was a pretty big effort in the Via Borghese. So I really left it up to Chris at this point. He knew her pretty well. All I told him was to be patient, and that's exactly what he did. You know, when Chad's filly made that little bit of an early move, and Chris sat still, and I could tell he had plenty of horse, so I was just, I felt pretty good about things.
Storms to the lead, and you know, made the, you know, not just the last move, but the best timed move, and wins, pays $17, and wins clear too. I mean, that was, you know, that was notable. I mean, got to Santa Monica and right on by. I mean, Santa Monica and Jose Ortiz tried for a couple of strides, but was clearly, you know, not going to be able to stay with the winner. What does this open up for you looking down the road in the winter and into the early spring?
Yeah, first of all, I'd say it's unusual for me to be passing Chad in the last few strides. I think I spend my life being beaten by him in the last few strides. So that was a reversal. But anyway, I think, you know, look, I think she's proven that she can play with the big girls. And I'd like to kind of plan her year around, you know, the big races in the fall, probably.
What about the distance range? What's the outside? What's the on the short side?
Yeah, Chris thought that she really handled a mile and a half. Maybe was more impressive even than in a previous race, which doesn't really surprise me. So, look, I think we're going to be looking at the mile and a quarter, mile and a half races. Obviously, the better races are at a mile and a quarter, and I think that's something she'll handle. But the fact that she can even run a little shorter than that gives us a lot of options.
Well, I was impressed. I mean, I had her among selections, but then didn't, like an idiot, didn't have her where I needed her in that last leg of the pick four. But this was impressive. I didn't notice. Was Mr. Shimakawa on hand?
No, his racing manager was and has been over for both trips. So I believe he watched from Hawaii.
Very nice. Well, this was one of the highlights, obviously, of Saturday. And from a, let me see, from a figure standpoint, I'm just curious, compared to she advanced again, 87 in the Long Island, a 91 in the Borghese, and now a 94. So with each passing start, she's getting better, using that as a measuring stick. Graham, let's touch base on a couple of other topics and everything else that went on over the weekend and in recent weeks. Give us an update. I know that the other stake runner didn't go as well, right? Can't help believing.
No, honestly, he's a horse that he really likes Monmouth. He likes to hear his feet rattle on firm ground, and I think that played against us on Saturday. You know, he's an older horse now. He's been very good to us. It's just a little bit hard to place him right now, but you know, we'll find a spot for him.
Well, we also got to ask you about a couple of horses that are coming up. And you've got a first North America runner at Gulfstream on Wednesday. And Trinity, this is a French-bred mizzenmast that somewhere along the line, Ron Franklin and Aaron Wellman, the Eclipse team, managed to find. What do we got here with this gelding?
Yeah, I think he's a useful horse. I'd entered him about a week or 10 days ago when this race was originally a mile and an eighth. I think he's going to need the distance. He's not a particularly aggressive horse. And he's probably, I think he's a useful horse, but I think he's going to need the education of an American start to kind of figure things out. I'd feel better about it if the race was a little further. But having said that, he's worked well. I'm excited to get him started.
Well, this is an interesting spot, and he does run looking for maiden when he's going to go a mile and a 16th. And I do see that Catherine Day Phillips, she's got a horse for the FitzHenrys, Abe Froman, the Sausage King of Chicago, and so that's a horse to watch. Let me ask you about some fan favorites, and I did notice the other day that Mrs. De Tomaso wins with Irish Strait, and that was a nice performance at Tampa.
Yeah, he's a cool horse. This horse, I mean, he actually ran with Can't Help Believing. Can't Help Believing was second. I took them over to Tampa just because I really didn't have a spot to run at Gulfstream. Obviously, Irish Strait had run at Gulfstream was a little disappointing, but now that he's run well over there, I'll probably come back in the stake on the 9th. I think it's called the Tampa Bay Stakes, but I could be wrong.
No, I think that's right. And of course, this also a good opportunity to pause. And I think you made it to one of the stallion shows, did you not? For Irish War Cry.
He looks great. You know, he seems to have been well received. David Wade, who manages Northview, has really, you know, been really upbeat about the interest they've had in him. So that's exciting. I think Maryland's a really good fit for him, and I think we'll probably breed a mare to him.
Outstanding. I was going to ask you about your seasons and what your situation was, the opportunity to bring a couple to him.
Yeah, no, I'm excited about it. We have a couple of breeding rights, and we have a nice mare, a Maryland bred mare called Miss Lombardi, that we'll send to him.
Well, best of luck, and in fact, over the weekend, I'm glad here was fairly late in January, and I was very glad to get the calendar from Northview, which is a great calendar that has all the sale dates. It's always right in front of me, and I thought it wasn't coming this year, and it showed up on Saturday. Let me ask you as well, Graham, where do things stand with Colonia?
So we gave her a freshening. You know, obviously we waited for that race in California. Kind of came at the end of a long year, which is always a problem with that race. But she's been sent to the farm to have a little break after that.
Ooh, so even though she'd had time off and ran, so we'll see her later in the spring, early summer?
Yeah, we'll see her in the summer for sure.
Okay. All right. And while we're on the Irish topic, and since we brought up Mrs. De Tomaso, you did win. You did come back and put Regally Irish on the grass after the inaugural. Was that allowance win enough to propel him into a stake try? Oh, I think we... Case, did we lose Graham? Did we lose Graham there? Yeah, I guess so. Oh, Casey says he should still be there. He was in the car. Regally Irish was out of the Gladiator King inaugural win, and then came right back and went on the grass and won. So I'm just curious in wire-to-wire fashion. Okay, Casey's going to call Graham back. And then, actually, we should really wrap up with Graham because I want to get to Weston Hamilton. And Weston's going to close out the day with us. And I'm just looking, who else do I have on the Graham Motion watch list? That's about it. So, he had it's actually been winning with regularity at Tampa. And has had a bunch of, and Laurel, he's had a bunch of maiden. There's some horses. In fact, when we talked to Graham late last year, there were a few horses that, you know, he said we're going to cycle through and got a couple of maiden winners, but a couple fell just short too. So Graham's still working through. Graham, I'm just...
I'm back.
There you go. I was just saying, you know, that when we talked last, we brought up some of the maiden types, and you've been running a lot of them, actually, at Laurel and at Tampa. You've had a lot of success at Tampa, Say the Word, won an allowance, but the maidens feel like they're still cycling forward, taking their time, and you got quite a few three-year-olds that should break through here over the next little while. No. Okay, Graham, we're having trouble with the. I think you're in a bad spot. Yeah, he's in a bad. All right, Case, you know what you do? Let's take our last break here, and there'll be plenty of opportunities to talk to Graham Motion. But let's get to Weston Hamilton to close out. And I know that Graham was, he said he was going to be in the car for 2 hours. So figures here at the end, we lose him for the last couple of minutes. But we had the most important portion of the conversation, and we'll talk to Graham again soon. Let's take the last break, and when we come back, the Eclipse Award-winning apprentice, Weston Hamilton. His father is Cowboy Steve Hamilton. Does he have a nickname? If his dad's Cowboy Steve, he's got to be something West. Weston. You got to come up with something. All right, you work on that. Back after this.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
This is the house that funk build. Groove Armada style.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I see you, baby. Shaking that ass. Shaking that ass.
back at the races 15 to noon here on Monday. And this is always now with Pegasus, this is always a kind of an odd week because there's so many big races to talk about, but the Eclipse Awards, of course, were on Thursday, so you want to weave those in, and that's what we'll do each day this week. And the first conversation I wanted to have was with Weston Hamilton, because aside from Murat Ortiz's daughter, I thought the most, and also Joe Harper, certainly Weston Hamilton's win in the apprentice rider category was really a highlight. And everything that has happened to Weston Hamilton has really been pretty magical since breaking in December of 17 and having a, you know, absolutely perfect apprentice year that ends up rewarding him with the Eclipse. And I know it meant a lot to him from things that he had to say going in, and it's a pleasure to welcome him, and congratulations, Weston, on the Apprentice Eclipse.
Oh, I sure appreciate it, boss.
You know, this is so much fun, and you know, for your family, and for Gorey Smith, Hammy's brother down at Ellery, who we talked to late last year too, and your name came up. All the great riders that Gorey has sent on their way, and you know, particularly your dad being able to ride and help you along. I think it's just wonderful, and I wanted everybody to hear from you today.
Thank you, sir.
Talk about the anticipation of Thursday night, and you know what it was like being in that room.
Oh, geez, it was unexplainable, boss. It was such a great feeling. I had so many people there supporting me. I had about 20 people from Oklahoma, family, friends, my mom and dad. My brother couldn't make it, but he was watching it, and they all recorded the whole ceremony, so I definitely knew I had a lot of people pulling for me, and I was just really nervous. They came out with the little video, and it was showing the wins and money earnings for the top three finishers, me, Edgar Morales, and Ray Lou, and I didn't know exactly where I was standing, 100% where I was standing in the statistics, but I had heard a few things from a few different people, and I checked it once or twice, but I didn't know exactly when everybody lost the bug and what they had, so I was nervous going into it a little bit. And then when they came up with it, and I was winning by wins, and I was second in earnings, and boy, my heart just kind of sank a little bit. I thought I was going to get beat. I thought Edgar was going to beat me. And when they called my name, it was the best feeling in the world. It took everything I had to keep it together. I almost lost it there for a minute during the speech.
You were tremendous. And, you know, the growing up in the circumstance you did, and you know, knowing at what point that you wanted to ride professionally, I mean, how quickly growing up did you make that decision?
Well, I always had it in my mind that I wanted to ride. I never really mentioned it to my dad or anybody until really late, I guess. I had ridden horses before when I was little, and I had just trail riding and riding in Western saddles and stuff like that. But I had never been in, like, racing tack or anything like that. So it was definitely a new and learning experience when I first started, but it was probably a couple months out from graduating high school when I mentioned it to my dad. I was gonna go play college lacrosse. I had a half scholarship to go play lacrosse in Kansas, and so it was a big move to not go to college. I really wanted to go do that, and I had never been on horses at a racetrack before, so it was kind of a big move for me. But I was ready to do it. I was set on. I wanted to ride and participate and see where I could what I could do with it and see how where everything went by going to the farm and learning and getting on a bunch of horses, because that's where you tell if you're going to be a rider or not. If you can't do it at the farm, you know you're not going to be able to do it at an actual racetrack. So,
well, and of course, the opportunity to work with Gorey, that kind of a tutelage. I mean, going someplace like Ellery and learning from him and under his direction. I mean, that's about as great a trajectory to the racetrack as any young rider could possibly have.
Oh man, Mr. Gorey, he's a big shout out to Mr. Gorey again. He's the best. He's such a great guy. He's one of the best men I know. He has a lot of respect for everybody, and he's just down to earth and such a good-hearted man. He took me in and put me to work right away, and I was working my butt off down there, getting on anywhere from 8, 10, 12 horses to 15 or 16, 17 horses a day. And after that, just doing everything else, taking care of the horses, turning them out, cleaning stalls, throwing hay, doing all kind of stuff. And he was right there and told us everything, and he guided me along from the start. And every time I would do something he thought I could have done better, he pointed it out and said, "Try this, bub." And I tried it, and it worked. And he's just such a great guy. I'm so glad he was able to take me in and teach me everything that he taught me. He taught me a lot of, my dad and him taught me a lot of good work ethic, and that's one of the main things that I think has helped me along, definitely, is because working hard and not just giving up because you don't feel like doing something, because that's, to me, that's when you get better, when you don't feel like doing something, and you go out there and you bust your butt and do it anyway, that's when you get better.
Well put. And I'm curious too, because your dad was away from the track for about 10 years. And how much of your interest in riding, how much of it helped motivate him to resume his career?
Oh, a lot, boss, a lot. Yeah, when I mentioned it to him, he was geared up and he was pretty excited. He wanted to start cutting weight and getting back down and ready to go again. And that was awesome, because I motivated him a lot and he motivated me. I mean, we pushed each other. We were both cutting weight and running 3 or 4 miles a day and getting ready to roll, getting fit. And I would tell Dad, "Come on, let's go. We're doing this. We're not goofing around today. Let's go." I'd motivate him. We'd go out there and bust butt and always work hard. And he definitely wanted to come back. Right when I mentioned it to him, he was set on coming back. And so it was a big influence for him.
I thought that was the case, and it's been, frankly, an underappreciated story. Cowboy Steve coming back along with you, and what's it like to ride, against him and with him in the room?
Oh man, it's about the same feeling of winning any kind of big race, but you keep the feeling because he's there the whole time. I don't know. It's unexplainable, honestly, boss. It is such a great feeling to be with my dad in the same race, or even in the morning, just working a horse with him. It's such a great feeling. It's a blessing to be able to ride and learn just by watching him. He doesn't even have to teach me anything. I still learn just from watching him. Like, just watching him, he teaches me so much. He taught me a ton, boss. He's told me so much. When I was at the farm and getting on horses down there, and I was messing up, and this was happening with this horse, and I couldn't get this horse to relax. He said, "Try this, try that." I tried it, and boom, it worked. Like, he teaches me over the phone. Me and him were like, we got the same mind when it comes to horses, I feel like.
Well,
but he definitely taught me a ton. And it's a great feeling being with him. I wish I could still be with him on the track today, but he's working on it. He just got out of back surgery and all, so he's doing therapy and just trying to get better.
Well, and you actually, on that topic, we should mention, I was watching live, Weston, that day, that spill, and, you know, the horse that ended up kind of propping and then cut you off on the rail. I mean, that could have been a disastrous incident.
Oh yeah, that was a little rough, but I had fun with the horse, and I didn't think he was coming. I thought he was going to go to the outside, honestly, and I kind of took just a little bit of a hold just to be cautious, and I was, here he comes, and boom, I'm standing up on him. He just come right over to me, and I said, there's nothing I could do. I could just take a hold and try to get out of there, which I couldn't get out of there, but thank God we're okay, and we jumped right up, and we were good. I jumped right up and ran off the track through adrenaline. Just, I didn't want people getting up on me and, are you okay? Are you okay? I just need to check myself. Am I okay? Like, you know?
Well, and of course, Jose Lascano, it looked even worse for Jose and ended up with just a broken nose somehow.
I know. He's so lucky for that. Boss, he's a good little rider, man. He's good, and he's a really cool man. I talk to him every once in a while when I go down there, and he's a real nice guy, and I sure hated to see all that happen. That was freaking rough. That wasn't too great on the sightseeing, but
no, I'm
definitely lucky for just breaking a nose. I thought, I mean, everybody had it in their mind that it was worse than that.
Agreed.
He was, I mean, praying that it wasn't, but from the looks, it looked bad.
Well, everything that you've been doing on the back of horses looks good, and that includes some stake wins already, and there'll be graded stake wins undoubtedly soon. Big part of your success has come with Dale Capuano. Talk about the people. You know, for those that might not have heard your speech, give it again. Mention everybody that's been instrumental at the racetrack helping you win that trophy.
Dale Cap. He's one of my main men. He put me on a ton of winners. I don't even know how many. I have no clue how many. We got a good percentage, and he puts me on bombs. And he runs them where they belong. He puts them in all good spots and figures out the best distance for them. He's a really good trainer. We got a couple stake wins, like you said. I just breezed Timeless Curls this morning. The stake filly, the little curling filly that I ride. She works real good. Gary Capuano, he put down a lot of winners. I win a lot for him. Anthony Ferrier put me on a bunch. Or not a whole lot. Anthony didn't put me on a whole lot, but every time he puts me on one, boy, they're right there for the money. I think I've won 3 out of 4 for him. But who else? Kieran McGee, he put me on quite a few winners. Shout out to all of them. Mark Reed put me on quite a few.
Yeah.
And I love riding for the trainers that my dad used to ride for. Like, my dad used to ride a lot for, I mean, I guess all of them, but recently he used to ride for Mark Reed a lot, and he won quite a bit of races for him, so that was real cool to win for the same trainer and win on a couple of courses that my dad's went on before. That was a really cool feeling. And shout out to Pat McGill. He put me on my first winner. Hugh McMahon put me on a bunch of winners. All the owners that I know real well, they're all good folks, and I appreciate you gunning for me to get on these good horses. I mean,
it all added up. It all added up to the Eclipse Award winning season for Weston Hamilton, and Weston, stay safe, and look forward to seeing you in person real soon, and I'm delighted to have you on today. I appreciate it.
Oh, I sure appreciate the call, boss. Tom and Tom said that you were wanting me to get on here, so I said, heck yeah, tell him to call me. So that was good. I sure appreciate it.
Not at all, and I want to thank Simon Purdy, and of course Simon also had Steve's book too. Now we got to work on a nickname for you. We got Cowboy Steve. We need, what is there, a nickname?
Well, I mean, a couple of people on the chat call me Cowboy Kid, but
Cowboy Kid, that's good.
Most everybody calls me Sweet.
Sweet, I love it. I love because, it. That's there you go.
In the doctor, anytime anybody's saying anything or messing with anybody, boom, I'm like swinging it right there. And I don't care who's messing with who, I'm right there. And my valet brother always says, here he is, look at Tweety Bird tweeting, diving in, tweet, tweet.
Well, and you can follow. You can follow Weston on Twitter, actually. Weston Hamilton 6. I love it. Wes, thanks so much.
All right, boss. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
You too. Weston Hamilton, everybody. How much fun. If you missed anything, replay tomorrow. I love it. Lots more to do on the recap. Want to thank Weston Hamilton, Graham Motion, Nick Tamaro, Michael McCarthy, Kieran McLaughlin, Johnny D. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.